We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens. What kind of radio show is this?
This 9/11 truth movement, where does it need to go in the future? What's the next step for it to sort of advance this thing?
Well, there's several ways to go. First off, of course, we need to just keep advancing the truth. We need to keep talking to people. Individuals need to be having book reviews, groups in their home, neighborhood parties, showing loose change, various things. Just educate people, get more and more people aware. And that's not to say proselytize. You don't have to go out and try to convince anybody of anything. Just say, look, friends, neighbors, relatives, there's some serious questions here, and you need to get seriously looking at it. And then recommend some things. My book, The Terror Conspiracy, puts it all in a context. Mm-hmm. Like I said, the young guys that did Loose Change, there's Alex Jones has some really good videos out there. There's all kinds of material. All of David Ray Griffin's books. It's all over the place.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you have to go look for it. Okay. Because like the Bible says, it says, "Seek the truth and you shall find it." Didn't say turn on TV and let one of those airheads tell you the truth. You have to seek it. You got to go out and look for it. And once you know it, then share it with your friends, your neighbors, everybody else. Now, there's also maybe some ways to go about it. This is really interesting. The news just came through today. Elliot Spitzer was the U.S. attorney in New York, and as such, he would certainly have jurisdiction over the murder of 3,000 people there in New York City. And I know that as far back as at least 2, maybe 3 years ago, he was presented with all kinds of documentation to convene a grand jury to find out, you know, what truly happened. But he dragged his feet. He's done nothing. And everybody keeps scratching their head and saying, I wonder why he hadn't moved on that. Well, today we find that he just hardly won the Democratic nomination for governor of New York. So, see, if you play ball, you advance in this system.
Mm-hmm.
But, if he had done his job and had convened a grand jury with subpoena powers, we could be getting to the truth of 9/11.
Yeah. Do you think that this sort of 9/11 is very similar in a lot of ways to the JFK assassination?
Absolutely.
Do you think this is some sort of situation where, like, every half century or so, there's a correction in the long-range plans of a global world government?
Hey, if you've got a methodology and it works one time, then why not use it again?
Yeah.
It's the same thing. In my book, The Terror Conspiracy, I draw more than 15 comparisons to the Kennedy assassination. For example, in both cases, within an hour of the event, when you would think the authorities really didn't even know precisely what had happened, they're already blaming one person. 1963 is Lee Harvey Oswald, and 2001 it was Osama bin Laden. They said he did it, and from then on, and this is another parallel, the government investigation has all been working on the hypothesis that Oswald did it or bin Laden did it, and they only accept the information that would support that thesis. They don't bother to go and look at all the other evidence that points in other directions.
Mm-hmm. Now, just to get on my own personal little soapbox here, one of the things that really irritates me about the 9/11 truth movement, I'm a big believer in the 9/11 conspiracy and everything, I'm totally on board with that, is sort of this holier-than-thou kind of attitude where it's like, if you research other aspects of the esoteric, then you're not a true patriot, you shouldn't be wasting your time on little green men and things like that.
Well, Tim, to you and to your listeners, I'll simply say that people learn at their own pace and in their own time and when they're ready to learn. If a person begins to open their mind with the 9/11 truth movement, and they begin to realize that the government has lied to us, and that 9/11 was not exactly how they portrayed it, but they are not yet ready to accept the reality of UFOs or extraterrestrials, then hey, peace to them. Okay, you know, let them do their thing, because once you set out on that pathway to truth, you can always stop, but you can never go back.
Yeah.
And once they know, once they come to realize that they were lied to about the Kennedy assassination, about the Gulf of Tonkin, about Watergate, about Vietnam, about Ruby Ridge, about the Murrah Federal Building, Oklahoma City, about Waco, Texas, and now about 9/11, then maybe they will go, gee, you know what? Maybe we've been lied to about UFOs and ETs.
Yeah, so maybe we should just be patient with them.
You just have to be patient. You just have to be patient. People learn when they're good and ready to learn and not before.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've used this to attack me because I wrote the world's top-selling nonfiction book on UFOs. They've hammered me with that, you know.
Yeah.
He writes about UFOs as if that means I don't know about anything else, you know, or that I must wear some kind of tinfoil hat or something. It's absolutely amazing, but and I'm not going to try to convince anybody to the reality. You can read my book, Alien Agenda, and you can find out all the facts for yourself and then make up your own mind. I'm not trying to convince anybody of anything.
Exactly.
But I will say this. If you just blindly dismiss the idea of UFOs, extraterrestrial life, alternative universes, exotic technology, if you just dismiss all that, then there's no way you're going to be able to accurately figure out what's truly happening in the world today because you're missing a big piece of the puzzle.
Exactly, exactly. That's what I've been trying to tell a lot of people myself, and I really appreciate your work because you're not afraid to tackle that part of the grand picture.
Well, it's just there, and to ignore it is to just ignore the elephant in your living room.
Exactly. And now, referencing back to our interview last year, you were must have been all that remote viewing research and practice you did, because you said, this was talking about in the event of a nuclear attack in America. This is a direct quote from you: huge mobs of people begging to get in. This is regarding the camps.
The camps, yeah.
Yep. Huge mobs of people begging to get in, saying, "Please give me some food and water." And we recorded the interview the first week in August of last year, and then at the end of the month, Hurricane Katrina. And the famous video of people waiting outside the convention center chanting for food and water.
That's right.
You pretty much hit the nail right on the head a month earlier that's what you'd expect to see, and it pretty much happened. So hats off to you in that regard.
You know, Tim, it's really interesting. On the one hand, puzzles the heck out of me, and on the other, I realize it's simply human nature.
Mm-hmm.
But in the late 60s, early 70s, I had front page stories in a major newspaper saying that Kennedy assassination was a coup d'etat, okay, and covered up the level of federal government. Well, I was the nut, the coup, the buff, the conspiracy theorist.
Yeah.
In 1973, I told everybody would listen that Nixon was a crook and he would not serve out his term. Well, I was unpatriotic and a conspiracy theorist and a buff, but I turned out to be correct, okay? And it's just come right on up.
Mm-hmm.
The day after 9/11, I posted on the internet and I said, look, you know, this is terrible, and we have to find out who's truly responsible for this, but, you know, let's don't run off half-cocked. Let's really get calm, cool, and collected and start looking at the facts and figure out who's truly behind this attack. And, of course, now with this ever-growing 9/11 truth movement, again, I've been proven correct. So my track record is pretty damn good.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right? Now, how about the track record of the federal government? Let's see. They got caught in this lie and that lie and another lie, and then they lied about that to cover up that lie. You know, they have no track record for veracity. And yet, I'm still the conspiracy theorist and the nut and the kook. It just, I don't quite understand it.
Yeah. Why do you think, this is sort of just a little throwback to the quote and everything. Why do you think that these massive camps and everything weren't utilized during the post-Katrina relocation and everything like that?
Well, number one, if you'll think back and remember, there was no real coordinated effort to relocate people. There was people just spread out, went where they could as they could.
Yeah.
There were some half-hearted efforts. And I think that, number one, that general plan of trying to get all those people was not put into effect because, number one, they were mostly taking care of themselves. And then they already had the on-site places like the dome and other places that were essentially holding areas
yeah.
for them, you know.
Yeah.
And they had troops around them, so they already had them. It was not that great a group of people. And then, plus, I suspect that they did not want to put that whole camp thing in operation because it would draw
attention.
Public attention to it. That's
yeah.
right. See, I got onto that way back there in gosh, it was so long back now, I can't even remember when it was, either late 70s, early 80s, when Castro sent all his boat people over here,
mm-hmm.
emptied out the jails, the insane asylums, and just sent all the undesirables over here. And, of course, we took them in, and the next thing I knew, I noticed that a whole bunch of them were being housed at Fort Chaffee, Arkansas. Well, when I was in the Army, I had briefly been stationed at Fort Chaffee, and it was my understanding that Fort Chaffee had been closed. So I did some checking, and I found out that officially it had been closed, but unofficially there was a maintenance team there, and it was still maintained. And so when they had these boat people, they just shuffled them in there, and they had a place for them behind barbed wire for them to stay. And that's when I began to go, what's this all about? And begin to find out about all these military reservations in various locations around the country that have been deemed detention centers in the event of an emergency. But see, that is smack so much of concentration camps. In fact, John Ashcroft, one of the reasons he was bounced out of there pretty quick is he was too obvious and too open in his desire to have concentration camps for dissidents. And what's a dissident? Anybody disagrees with you.
Yeah, you and me.
Okay, you and me.
Yeah.
And so it's a pretty frightening thing when you look at it, and they're there. They're just sitting there, okay? I detail all this in my book, The Terror Conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about Rex 84 and a lot of these codename programs to round up American citizens and throw them in camps.
Yeah.
Okay? And that's what's going to happen if martial law gets declared. And it's all just sitting there waiting to go. All they got to do is just sign the name, and then we're off and gone.
Given the government's lousy track record of just about getting anything done in a bureaucratic sort of way, in the foul job that FEMA did on Katrina and everything, is there some hope that maybe that if they pulled the trigger on that sort of situation that they really couldn't do the job very well? Or is it a situation now where they have so many people in there that'll just be willing to follow orders that there's not much of a chance that people are going to say, no, I'm not doing that?
Oh, boy. That's a tricky question. If you'll recall, in the late 90s, there was a bit of a scandal about the fact that they polled military units, particularly Marines out in California, and asked them if they'd be willing to kick in American citizens' doors and take their weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And that was actually not supposed to be made public, but it kind of leaked out. It caused a little furor, and then they spun that story by saying, putting a good light on it, saying, well, 3 out of 5 said they would not do that. Well, but that means 2 out of 5 said they would.
Yeah.
And it's my understanding that they have been transferring and these people who say, yeah, I'll do that, all into the same units, so that they'll have whole units, whole brigades, whole divisions of people who say, yeah, I'll kick in their door and go get their weapons. So, you know, this, again, it depends on how widespread this becomes. And the only good thing is that I think the only reason this happened before now is that, number one, America's corporate leaders are trying to maintain the bottom line profits as long as they can.
Yeah.
And if that kind of disruption comes, then it's just going to be almost nationwide chaos. And the bottom line is going to be severely impacted. The stock market will probably crash. And, I mean, it'll be just terrible. And so they're trying to stave that off. And the only other reason, of course, is because we have guns. Okay, and the American people are pretty long-suffering. We've had it too soft, too long. We're going to put up with a whole lot. But if it gets to the point of where they're coming around, kicking in your door and wanting to take your gun, or wanting to haul you off to a detention center, or wanting to force you to take inoculations against some bird flu or something akin, I think that people are going to finally say, we've had enough, and there could be some real problem. And I would hope that we could all get aware of what's happening happening and start using our vote and start using our political processes to avoid something like that.
There's sort of like various scenarios that this could play out.
Well, they're playing with fire, okay, because they could tip the whole thing over at any time. But I'll give you two different scenarios, one which we've kind of touched on, which is that some big event happens, maybe a nuclear device goes off in some mid-American city, or there's a huge epidemic in some big city. People panic. They try to move out of the cities. There's lots of widespread disruption. The economy teeters or falls. Martial law is declared. They start trying to round up people and put them in the detention centers so they can keep everybody under control. Then the militias and the freedom fighters start going wild, and we could really get in almost a civil war state, in which case they would then call in the United Nations peacekeeping force to come and restore order, and many thoughtful and moderate middle Americans would be all for it. Please come and restore order. Okay, and the next thing you know, we'd be living in a country that's dominated, you know, by the United Nations Peacekeeping Force, and we'd find the World Trade Organization, you know, running the country. Now, let's assume that it doesn't get that bad, and we keep muddling along. What's going to happen is that they're going to complete their Canamex highway plans. This is a plan for that super corridor that's going to reach from southern Mexico all the way up through the central United States and branch off into eastern and western Canada.
Yeah.
You can go find that at the National Super Corridor Coalition, or NASCO, NASCO.com. Mm-hmm. And you'll see the map for all this. And they're very, very pleased to announce that it has nothing to do with government. They're doing this regardless of government. Congress has not authorized any money for this, nor authorized the implementation of it, and yet it's just happening. The World Trade Organization has now ordered the U.S. Congress to change some U.S. laws, and they have meekly gone along with that. We've lost the republic. We're losing our sovereignty. And with this Canamex Highway, which would be the only customs port, will be at the Smart Port in Kansas City, and it will be sovereign Mexican territory, and Mexican nationals will be running that, and that would be just about the first time that they'll check on anything, so there will be no borders, and this is creating, of course, what the Council on Foreign Relations has been pushing for some time, the North American Union.
Yeah.
This was all, by the way, this was all cemented with the Security and Prosperity Partnership signed by President Bush in 2005 in Waco, Texas, along with Mexican President Vicente Fox and then Prime Minister of Canada, Paul Martin. This alone is grounds for impeachment because the Constitution states that the President cannot sign treaties with foreign nations without a two-thirds approval vote of the U.S. Senate. Well, the U.S. Senate did not vote to approve this, and a lot of them don't even know it's happening. And then Bush put all this through the Commerce Department, and they've been pushing it through the state highway departments, and there is already a lot of controversy and backlash, but it's all taking place within the states. Texas, it's the Trans-Texas Corridor. Ohio, I think, is in rebellion. Minnesota's got problems with this whole thing. Kansas does. But everybody thinks it's a state problem. They don't see that this is the embryonic stages of creating a North American Union. And, yes, with its own monetary unit, the AMERO, as offered by the Council on Foreign Relations, which would replace the Mexican peso and the U.S. and Canadian dollar. And in other words, Tim, they're duplicating the process that they did to pull all the European nations into the European Union.
Yeah.
And, of course, they're already starting the same plan in Asia, and it's amazing because it looks like that if everything just continues the way it's going and unless people wake up, we're going to be in a George Orwell 1984 world where there are three primary regions, and I'm sure that at any time two of them will be in conflict with each other, and we'll be in a perpetual war, perpetual state of conflict and agitation, while the international banking elite play both ends against the middle.
Yep. It's a very depressing situation, but
and that's the best scenario.
Yeah. To hone in on one aspect of 9/11 that is probably the stickiest one for me that I always sort of had a problem with, but you dealt really well with it in the book, and that's the phone calls from the passengers on the planes on 9/11. Can you talk just a little bit about that?
First off, Do I mention the voice morphing technology in the book, because that was coming in just about the time that the book was being completed?
No, you didn't get it.
All right, Well, first off, I know that I do address the problem of cell phone calls in particular, because they just weren't there in 2001. You couldn't do it, basically. By the time your signal reached a cell phone tower, the plane, you know, at 30,000 feet going 500 miles an hour, it has lost that signal and is trying to pass it off to another one. You just couldn't do it, and I had experts tell me that unless you were under 5,000 feet or 5 to 6,000 feet, you really couldn't make a cell phone call. And then, of course, in 2004, in the fall, American Airlines and a high technology company announced this new chip they had developed, and they had tested it, and they said, hey, wow, this is going to allow cell phone calls from high-flying aircraft. That's 2004. So what the heck was going on in 2001?
Yeah.
All right. I think the answer is simply this. This is a Washington Post article from 1999. I wish I'd had it in time to put into the book.
Mm-hmm.
Former commander-in-chief of the U.S. Special Operations Command, a General Carl Steiner, sat in amazement as he listened to a recording of his own voice say, gentlemen, we've called you together to inform you that we are going to overthrow the United States government. Well, of course, General Steiner had never said anything like that.
Yeah.
But he himself said, damn, that's me. And what it was a demonstration at Los Alamos National Laboratory of voice morphing technology. In other words, they now have the digital capability of just taking a snippet of your voice, and then they can reconstruct it, and then they can make you say anything they want you to say. They had a recording of Colin Powell stating, I'm being treated well by my captors. And one of the scientists that worked on this said they chose to have him say something like that that he would never otherwise have said.
Yeah.
So they can create these voices now. And that was announced publicly in 1999, which if you know anything about military intelligence, that means they probably had that technology 10 years earlier.
Yeah.
But it was all secret. And that really makes me wonder about the cell phones, because we know the most famous one of the cell phone calls were from Barbara Olson.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she was a newscaster. Her voice was all over the place.
Yeah.
And then we've got this fellow named Mark Bigham, who calls his mother. And does he say, hi, Mom, it's me, like anybody else would? No, he says, hey, Mom, this is Mark Bigham, your son, you know.
Wait a minute.
I've never said anything like that to my mom.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, then he goes on and he says, we're being hijacked, you know. He says, oh, my God, you know. He said, I want to tell you I love you. And she said, oh, well, who is it? Who's on there? And he says, well, you believe me, don't you, Mom? And she says, yeah, I believe you, but who is it? Who's captured airplanes? And he says, you do believe me, don't you, Mom? And he gets the same response. It's like that's the only snippet they had,
yeah.
You know. And so it certainly makes you wonder. I can't tell you that that's the answer to the cell phone calls, but what I can tell you is they have that technological capability.
Yeah. Well, what's going on for you next? What can we look forward to from you? What's in the pipeline for Jim Mars?
Well, I'm working on a new book, which I'm not really at liberty to start discussing now, only to say that it will be an extension of my Rule by Secrecy and my Terror Conspiracy.
Awesome.
And taking it even into further stranger, darker areas. And, of course, I'm working on some TV projects and hopefully a movie project. And I'm still teaching my course at the university and lecturing. And anyway, it's a real busy time for me.
I'm sure.
You know, I have to stop and remind myself that I am approaching retirement age, but I don't see any retirement in the offing for me.
Yeah.
Just too much stuff going on. I got too much to do.
Yeah. Any conferences you want to plug that you're going to be at or anything like that you want to mention?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Thank you for reminding me. First off, on December the 9th, I'll be in Kansas City, Missouri, at the Uptown Theater for something called the Dark 30 Tour. And this is going to be really, really neat. I'll be there talking about government conspiracies, and Nick Redfern will be there there talking about UFOs, and Josh P. Warren will be there talking about paranormal activities. Plus, we'll have some music, plus some food.
Awesome.
It sounds like it's going to be a really great event. Anybody that thinks they're going to be in the Kansas City area at the time ought to go check dark30tour.com and pick up some advance tickets while they're cheap.
Yeah.
And then I'll be out in Arizona for an event out there. This is going to be November the 17th through the 19th in Tempe, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be talking about future technology from the past.
Ooh, interesting.
And just to give you a hint of what that's all about is, why did we make that mad dash to Baghdad when we invaded Iraq, which left the countryside largely unpacified, which has created this terrible situation that we're in right now? So what was it in Baghdad that we had to go to? Certainly wasn't Saddam Hussein, because we didn't catch him for a long time after that.
Yeah.
But there was something in there that apparently our military intelligence leaders decided they just had to get hold of. And I'll discuss that at Tempe, Arizona.
Awesome. Awesome. How can people get the books? Anywhere they want, really. It was all over the my
bookstore. Yeah, any bookstore will have it. Amazon.com has it. We have some available from JimMars.com. So, you know, they're just all over the place. You may have to ask for one, give them to order one, but I'm sure they can get one a day or two.
Exactly. And the new book is The Terror Conspiracy, Deception, and 9/11 and the Loss of Liberty. And much like last year when we were talking about rule by secrecy, it's very important to point out 31 pages of sources in this book. Like Jim always says, don't believe him. Do your own research. Look in the 31 pages of sources. If you want, if you don't believe something, find it in the sources. Look it up. Do your own research, right?
Absolutely. And then, you know, then it's not a question of do you believe Mars or not. It's a question of do I know this or not.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
Once you know something, you know it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jim, thanks for being on the show. I really appreciate it. It was great having you be a part of the new season. And anytime I get a chance to talk to you, it's always fun for me.
Thank you, Tim. And to you and your audience, I'll just leave you with this. Always question authority. And the higher the authority, the harsher the questions.
That does it for this week's edition of Banal of America Audio. I want to thank Jim Mars for sitting down and talking to us for so long. The new book is The Terror Conspiracy, Deception, 9/11, and the Loss of Liberty. We couldn't do a season premiere without Jim Mars, so I'm really psyched we could have him back on the show and bring it all back home again. I want to give big thanks to Leslie, Chiron, R. Lee, Ralph Molesworth, and Joe V. of BanalofAmerica.com for your tremendous help in the ramp-up to getting Banal of America Audio Season 2 up and running. Check out BanalofAmerica.com, where you can read their columns, find out more about them and what they have to say about the world of the esoteric. Their stuff is tremendous, and I hope you check it out. If you are a long-time listener to Banal of America Audio, and you want to help us out, you want to help celebrate the new season, click on the PayPal button at BanalofAmerica.com. Help us keep the show going. Help us make these long, long-distance phone calls to big esoteric names. It costs money to put a show on like this, and we don't have ads or sponsors or anything like that. So if you can help out, we'd appreciate it. Next week, we've got another big interview lined up for you. Paul Kimball, controversial UFO documentary filmmaker and blogger extraordinaire, is going to be on the show. We've got a special musical preview coming up. So stick around, and you'll hear a little bit of what we're going to be talking about on Banal of America Audio Season 2 next week. Folks, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for coming back. And if you're new, thanks for sampling the show. You'll be hearing from me next week with Paul Kimball. Until then, this is Tim Banal, signing off.